On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.
And welcome into the Who's On Podcast, part of the Saber Podcast Network, presented in part by Joe Reed and Alcova Mortgage. Score your perfect home today. We are through week one of the college football season, week one of Virginia's football season. We have gotten through the season opener now, a 48-7 win over Coastal Carolina. Recorded a couple quick thoughts after the game. You can check those out on the Who's On Podcast new YouTube channel over there. We'll try to do some post-game reports after most of the football games and probably into basketball, maybe eventually when we get to baseball season. Just a new thing we're trying there. But to get a more bigger, complete picture of what we saw in Saturday's season opener, I've got the man, Ahmad Hawkins, the Ball Hawk, lead analyst for the Virginia Radio Sports Radio Network and host of the Believe in Virginia podcast. Ahmad, week one through the books. You got your legs under you now?
Yeah, I got my legs under me. That was an exciting game. It was just fun to watch.
It had a little bit of everything, but I did get to around the fourth quarter, I think I looked up and there was like 10 minutes left. And I was like, are there really 10 minutes left? Like, let's wrap this thing up. Like, we've got third stringers in there. Like, I let them get their game time. We got to see the Boone Lord minutes at quarterback and let's go now. But overall, really good start to the season for Virginia. A lot of good things they put out there. So let's get into that now. Let's start off with just our one big takeaway from Virginia's season opening win over Coastal Carolina, which, by the way, largest margin of victory under Tony Elliott was 40. It's 41 points. The previous was 21 points last season against Richmond. Hadn't seen them blow out a lot of teams before, and this was kind of like the first big statement of the season. So one big take, Ahmad.
Special teams was special. A block punt and then a kickoff return for a touchdown, because that's something we hadn't seen in years since Joe Reed left. Just our return unit being as special, and then seeing the punt return team cause a turnover.
I didn't put it in the rundown, but I felt it was going to come up organically because, yeah, we hadn't seen the special teams be like this. And it was interesting after the game, like looking at, you know, who are some of those guys? It was like Caleb Hardy and Trey McDonald, guys that had been in a lot of playing time previously and now have kind of adjusted to, you know, playing those roles on special teams now. So that's kind of, that was good to see. It was a lot of starters that was playing the special team minutes. That's something that's, you know, kind of happened over the last couple of years with Tony Elliott as they kind of try to get the ship righted with special teams. Mine is so many players, so many players. I couldn't keep track. And I know we got into, you know, some little garbage time blowout minutes, you know, towards the end there, but just trying to keep track of the offensive line in the first half was a chore in and of itself. We'll talk about that later. But yeah, I made the joke with a couple people, like Pro Football Focus has their work cut out for them trying to keep track of who had this many snaps or who was playing what position.
Like, and they put it up too. I read it. They put it up. They tracked snaps.
It had to have been like a, you know, two person job last night, just going through all that. But I'm sure for y'all, I was walking down to the field pregame and I was seeing a couple numbers and I was like, I don't know who that is. Like, I've been to all the fall camp practices and everything, and I was just like, I'm not sure who that is still. And I know fans probably even more so because they didn't get to go to practice. Were y'all like looking down at that roster chart a couple times every couple minutes?
Yeah, because I have a bad habit of just – I always just remember numbers. So usually if somebody's asked me how the team look and they say somebody's name, I'd be like, I just know numbers. I could say, hey, number seven is this. Yes. Number six did that. Number four. So I throw out numbers a lot. So, yeah, I always had to catch myself looking down and getting the names. And, you know, and some players, you know, their name just stick with you quick. And then others you can lose track of the actual name, but you know what they bring to the table. So yeah, that was funny in the booth, just trying to look down real quick, like, oh, that's so-and-so.
It was throwing me off too, because some positions they have guys that are injured out for the season, so they have three guys wearing number one, or
Number
I
nine
think
is like
number
that.
nine. Yeah. Like one time I was like, I see like a number nine on the sidelines, but Jordan Robinson's out on the field right now, so I don't know what's happening. But yeah, I couldn't keep up with it. But all right, let's get into our Who's On Podcast Player of the Game. And I put out four answers for people, but overwhelmingly 88% of the vote went to this guy right here, Cam Ross. Incredible debut for him. Seven catches, 124 yards, and a touchdown through the air. He thought it should have been two. He got really close on that first one. He said that he almost threw up because he was that close to getting there. I don't know if you ever had that feeling, Ahmad, when you were playing. It's like you almost threw up because you didn't get quite get that touchdown.
Yeah, it's a bad feeling. Like if you haven't scored all year just yet, it's the worst feeling because you just never know like when you're going to get back. And that goes to something that's a sidebar. People say, I like you've been there when you score a touchdown. A lot of people ain't scored touchdowns if they got that approach. Everybody not Barry Sanders. Like I'm scoring. Like this may be my last time I ever get here, so I'm gonna
Yeah.
celebrate.
You never know. You never know. Then he got the 100-yard kickoff return for a touchdown as well with Cam Ross. And to no one's surprise, it was the first time since 2019 when our sponsor Joe Reed returned a kickoff return for a touchdown. But
Versus
what
Duke,
you
right?
just yeah, versus Duke threw up the peace sign as he was going down the
You
sidelines.
know Cam did that too, right?
He did. I
A
saw it
couple times as
briefly on the
well.
broadcast on the replay. Yeah. What did you make overall of Cam Ross? We heard all, through fall camp that he was really making a name for himself. Keith Gaither called him the MVP of the offense during fall camp. But he was just electric in his debut.
Yeah, just watching his practice, how he practiced, he really came on in the fall because in my opinion, Cam Courtney was like the lead guy to solidify that slot position. And Cam just continuing to work. And showing his maturity and just playing a lot of college football, he started to peak at the right time, and he just started doing a he didn't even do anything different. He just continued just to elevate more and more in the sense of, his ability to run routes, recognize coverage, finishing plays. So just seeing that first catch he got with our quarterback getting out of the pocket and making himself available, making the catch, making people miss, and as you're saying, getting down to the red zone. Right at the goal line, I was a little worried because I felt like we were going to have the same red zone woes. So I was disappointed when he didn't score as well. But our offense still scored. But the kickoff return was refreshing because my main thing when I was telling a lot of people, if Cam could be as special as the sponsor Joe Reed, we can really win some games because that's really a momentum shifter. Like a lot of times, people don't understand when people score, they get excited, they just cut the lead or they took the lead, and when you could within that excitement, you forget that we got an electrifying returner and you kick it to them and they return it for a touchdown, they take it right back. So Cam, man, he just had a special game. And it just shows how he set up his blocks, the burst that he has, and he run it's an effortless type of stride that he has. You can tell he has a track background and he has elite speed. So it was fun seeing him having this coming out party in front of our own fans in the very first game.
I thought it was hilarious. He said that that wasn't even the way the kick return was supposed to go. He just saw the C parted and he went for it. And he said like around the 20-yard line, he was like, "Yeah, no one's gonna catch me." And like it looked like everyone else was just like, "Nope, we're not gonna catch him." I think Jamari Taylor said he was sitting on the bench and just like saw him like make that like first cut up, and he was like started sprinting down the sideline because he was like, "I know where this is going." And with the wide receiver part of it too, and Tony Elliott had talked about this after the game, is like they brought him in originally as like another deep threat option behind Trell Harris just to give him some depth there, because we all saw what happened to the offense last year when Trell Harris was out. And then they kind of slowly moved him into that slot receiver position. And I think that's why another reason it took a little bit of time for him to get some traction there and to start getting people to talk about him. And that's why he kind of blew up this in fall camp. UVA offense overall, let's get into this now. Like I mentioned before, it was the largest margin of victory under Tony Elliott, most points scored under Tony Elliott as well. The previous high was also against Coastal
Posted.
Carolina last year, when they scored 43 down there. Much different way they did it this time. They didn't run the ball for nearly 400 yards, but also fifth most total offense under Tony Elliott in a single game with 454 total yards. I think the other ones were like against Richmond, William & Mary, and the Coastal last year. And then let's talk about Chandler Morris now. just because that's kind of where the offense starts. 19 for 27, 264 yards, two touchdowns, most importantly, no turnovers, and then five carries for 50 yards. Before we get into slide, don't slide, let's get into what you thought about Chandler Morris's overall first game at UVA.
Yeah, he was very poised. You could tell he's played a lot of football this fourth straight year of starting for a program, too, at TCU, then last year at North Texas, now here at UVA. And you can tell that 3-3-5 defense, which is three down linemen and dropping a lot of guys in coverage, his ability to scan from left to right. He got away with a throw on third down going to Dakota Twitty that the Mike linebacker got his hands on. And ironically, in the second quarter, the touchdown pass to Cam Ross, it was the same play, but this time he came out and he looked to the left because that play to Dakota, he actually locked on to Dakota. The linebacker, jumped it. So he showed that he can learn from his mistakes. So he looked to the left, 1001 and came immediately right to the right and threw it to a spot that he trusts Cam would be at. So that's just showing me little nuances that he has. His pocket presence is phenomenal because he'll slide up or he'll slide out. And, other than not sliding, man, at the end right there, and I understand that too, right? Like his first game, you scramble, you have the longest rush of the game. And but he has to understand how important he is to us. And but overall, a very encouraging game for Mr. Chandler Morris.
The funny thing is, he made that run. I think it was a 28-yard run, gets right down there near the goal line. And I had the tweet ready to go because his dad, Chad Morris, obviously the former Clemson offensive coordinator, head coach at SMU, Arkansas, he had told me in the week before when I interviewed him that he wanted Chandler to run more this year because he said that it was something that he didn't really get to do as much at North Texas. And so he wanted him to do that. So I was like, all right, got that tweet fired up, ready to go, send it out. And then I was like, he's still down. I'm gonna save this one for maybe future games. Tony Elliott said after the game, it looks like a left AC joint injury, and he'll kind of held him out precautionary. We'll see kind of how he progresses through the week. They're gonna take a look at him today as well. Obviously, you don't want to go down to Raleigh without Chandler Morris, but you got Daniel Kalen back there. That's one of the reasons you went out and got him, as well as a guy that could be there for the future. Real quick, more on Morris, just his game. You mentioned the presence in the pocket. That's probably the biggest surprise that I had to me. Just not because I didn't think he could do it, but a smaller quarterback around 6 feet tall. We saw that was a big problem that Anthony Calandre struggled with last year, is kind of finding that rhythm in the pocket. But it seemed like he moved around the pocket, kind of got into those gaps and those spaces where he needed to throw the football. And you talk about that throw to Dakota Twitty that he missed. I still was like, all right, he threw the ball over the middle of the field. Like, that's what we were asking for all last season. Overall, really impressed with his game. And he kind of grew into it more as the game went on. Those are your stats with pretty much just one half of football being played. That's a pretty good start to your career.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it just shows, like, and it's not me trying to not previous quarterbacks. It's just me praising Chandler. When you could really dive into a playbook and master the playbook and understand the entire picture schematically with the routes that you're running, when you're diminutive and really can't see, you just know what somebody should appear. So you get to that spot versus trying to track them the whole way. I'm gonna just go here. I'm gonna just go there. Like, based off two safety look or one or the rover coming down. You see the corner jump outside. He's played a lot of football. And then his dad, being an offensive guru himself, he's been bred for this. So I was just seeing a young man that early in the game was taking what the defense was giving him or just going to the first one and kind of setting things up and saying, all right, y'all think I'm just going to always throw wild look. Now I'm going to start going here and coming back. When he started really showing his skills of just scanning the field, it was holding Coastal Carolina middle backers and safeties, he was freezing them because they were playing, where they were buzzing underneath. They was playing on both hashes. He would keep them locked on the hash, understanding that he has a bend route coming on the opposite side and fitting it between two guys. And credit to Coach Kitchens running these mesh reads where typical mesh routes, you run the under route and you go from one side of the field all the way to the other. But when you got a mesh read, if you see as a defender waiting in that area where you want to hook up, you stop from in between the guy you pass and the guy that's waiting. And we had that. So Jaden dropped the first one on fourth down. And then you saw later in the game, we started completing them, but they were just sitting in spots. And, you know, I just love that of just showing that we have a quarterback who can scan the field, and then Dez showing he can trust and get production out of a passing offense when everything's clicking.
Yeah, for sure. My favorite part of the whole game, though, was these receivers. We talked about Cam Ross already. Terrell Harris, he had been dealing with a hamstring injury coming into it. He looked pretty good out there. I know he didn't technically start the game. Eli Wood got his first career start, right? And then Jamal Edgerin was out there, too, who, like, props to that guy. Took 36 class hours this summer to get ready for this school year. Like, I kept saying, like, no one's talking about Jamal Edgerin. It's because the guy is, like, trying to get through all these classes. But, 6'3", 220-pound guy. Like, he just came out there, and he looked natural. But I love this receiving group. I think, here we go, combined for 241 yards total there between the three of them. And, you know, I was watching Notre Dame on Sunday Night Football and seeing, you know, our guy Malachi Fields out there with Notre Dame. And a lot of people were like, we don't have that number one guy anymore. We don't have, you know, that top option. And, you know, we're going to miss Malachi Fields. And absolutely, I mean, he's an outstanding player. But I kind of liked and Chandler Morris is kind of more prone this way anyway, distributing to a number of guys. And I like how each of those guys kind of complements each other.
Yeah, if you got a plethora of passing targets, it makes it difficult for the defense. And that comes down to just the quarterback having that trust and that relationship and understanding schematically where the ball should go. Salute to Malachi, had a great, a spectacular catch on the sideline yesterday in the game. But Jamal brings a guy that is similar in size. I feel like Jamal is a little bit better of a route runner. And you saw that in the touchdown catch he had. He ran a little smash route. Just being that size and be able to burst 3 yards inside, plant, push the DB by, and snap it back outside and snatch the ball down just shows his ability as a receiver. And he brings that possession tight, but he does have enough speed to get over the top. But we understand that you talk about Cam Ross. The coach is bringing him in to be that deep threat with Trail, but then understanding, like, why put a receiver in the box? What else can he do for us? Because Trail's deep throw, he was on the inside as well. You know, it was in a bunch set. So understanding that that's not just make a receiver a one-trick pony. That's utilize all their skill sets because that's going to help us in the totality as an offense. It's like with Dakota Twitty being a tight end now but still being to flex him out as well. So I like our receiving corps as a whole. Like, we even got Abdullah in. We got Newton Short in the game as well. Cam didn't get – I don't think Cam Court got any catches, but he's available. So Darren was out. Jaden, I talked about the drop that he had, but he's still there. He's another big body. He came from Notre Dame. So we have a lot of guys. Eli Wood had a very good fall. So we have a lot of guys that can really keep defenses on their heels. And it's just all predicated on everybody working and just answering the bell when their name is called and when we ask them to make a play.
When we mentioned missing that deep threat last year, now you have Terrell Harris, you got Cam Ross and Edgerin. Yep. All three of those guys can take the top off if you need them to in a game. So you've got the speed out there that they didn't have necessarily once Terrell Harris went out last year. It's a good grouping of guys, and I like how they kind of, you know, work off of each other. And let's take a moment to pause and talk about that Terrell Harris catch.
Well, we didn't talk about Dre either. Shout out to Dre.
Yeah, Dre's. Dre and Tyler Coleman is another one that got in there. But let's talk about that Terrell Harris catch, man. Like, I was watching. I didn't believe he caught it. I didn't think he got it. But he was insistent upon it, and they took a look at it. I put it out there, and I think everyone kind of came back with the right response. So, you know, best UVA catch since, and most people said Dontayvion Wicks down in Miami.
At the Miami. Yeah, that Dontayvion one, that is a good one because it was off somebody's back. But it still reminds me of, like, the Kanan one that he had versus Miami.
Yeah, another really special one. But I mean, the concentration one on this, I saw it on the SportsCenter top 10. I think it was like number 4. There's a lot of really good catches around college football this weekend. But like the concentration, like, tips it off the hand and like kind of like keeps playing, like juggling with it with one hand going down to the ground.
But they do a lot of drills like that. Coach Mims, shout out to salute the Coach Mims. They implement those type of situations and they practice that daily. It's the old adage of, like, you know, basketball players, like, oh, it's a bad shot. But what happens if you practice taking bad shots? Is it really a bad shot? you know, like we see with deep threes now. It's like, why are they shooting so deep? Well, they practice that. So, you know, they do a lot of one-hand catch drills. They do a lot of jump ball drills, and they really try to master it. Like, they go half speed, they go walk through, then they do it full speed. So receivers know anytime you try to push a DB off, a smart DB is going to say, you touch me, I'm keeping it. So if you touch me with that hand, I'm going to trap that hand. And the defensive back trapped his left hand, and he tracked the ball with the right hand. And lo and behold, their tight end had a nice catch on.
Oh my gosh,
the bar, the inside hand, man. Yeah. So, yeah, these receivers, man. Salute to those young men. They put in that work, man, and you love to see it come out on the biggest stage because that's on a bomb, a 48-yard bomb too.
Yeah. You talk about the work. Cam Ross said after the game, this is in my article up on the Sabre.com about Cam Ross's debut, that they, Adam Mims challenged them to catch 500 balls a day in the offseason. And I was like, well, surely y'all are just doing that on the jugs machine, right? And he said, no, we're throwing to each other. I'm like, that is insane. Like, and you're throwing. Know,
that's bad ball drills because a lot of them can't throw. So that's
exactly good work. we're not seeing many reverses with them throwing the ball this year. Yeah, exactly. They're working on all different angles and not because they were trying to.
That's a great work, man.
Yeah, that blew my mind there. But other couple things on offense. I mentioned off the top, the 10 offensive linemen played in the first half. Yeah, Mikhail Boley, Noah Josie, Brady Wilson, Drake Metcalf, and Wallace Unamba. Those were the starters. Yep. But then, you know, Wallace Unamba kind of picked up an injury. Tony Elliott said it was like a right knee injury. And he tried to come back, but just couldn't really do it. So, but they don't think it's serious. But they had Tyshawn Wyatt and Jack Whitmer both play snaps at right tackle in the first half. And then there was that one series, I think it was when Harrison Whaley scored a touchdown, where they subbed like the whole offensive line outside of Brady Wilson, brought in Whitmer, Ethan Sipe, Kevin Wigginton, and Ben York. And they look pretty good out there. Like, the depth on the offensive line, I know if they've lost a lot of guys, but I think they're still pretty solid there.
Yeah, they got a lot of depth. And I love what I saw schematically, like the red zone, right? You see a lot of college football team offenses bring in extra linemen when they're in the red zone. And you have basically a guard and a tight end on the backside, but you got like five offensive linemen on one side. And we implemented that, whether we did a direct snap to our back or we went under center with our quarterback. It's just one of them things where it's like, you can't expect to just stay spread. You got to, like, if you're tipping your hat, you're tipping your hat. Who cares? If you're bringing in extra linemen and you got confidence that they've been Coach Wright and Coach Hess been doing a great job coaching these young men up and getting low and really driving, I feel like that's a huge confidence booster because that shows me, like, if we got to go fourth and short or third and short, we could bring in a package that isn't a gimmick like the Grady Bunch, but a true power football package, and we could, you know, control the line of scrimmage. So, you know, that speaks to what you were saying, and it speaks to the NIL as well. If you're going to invest in linemen with money, you better use your money.
Yeah. And like some of these guys, a lot of transfers in there with Wyatt, Sipe, Wigginton, but like Ben York and Jack Whitmer and Noah Josie, these are guys that have kind of been in the Mikhail Boley, have been in the program and kind of, you know, starting to develop a little bit more. So I know it wasn't kind of the dominant running display that we saw last year against Coastal Carolina, but I think it was kind of they were playing with what Coastal was giving them. And they were giving them a ton to run in the running game. We can talk about the running backs too here. Four running backs had 7+ carries. That was Jamari Taylor, Xavier Brown, Noah Vaughn, and Harrison Whaley, and no one had a run longer than 8 yards. Mm-hmm. That was the only flag, I guess, you could throw out there. Any concern with the running game, or you think it's just what they were giving you this week?
Nah, it wasn't a concern because I felt like they controlled the line of scrimmage. I felt like they got what they wanted. Like, once they really settled in, it was hat on hat, let's get behind our pass, let's get four. Because we get four, get another four, you know, four yards, three straight downs. That's 12 yards the first down. And I felt like that got our offense going. Coastal even tried that, but they could never get any success on first down. But we started getting success where it was like 6 or 7 yards of rush. And then we go quick game and we throw a pass. Quick game again, run. And then quick game, we take a shot on the middle of the field. Because if you're getting those chunk plays as far as 5 to 6 yards, that's demoralizing to a defense. It really is, because it's going to cause you to come out that two safety shell. So if you're in the two safety shell, yes, you're limited to us 8 or less yards rushing. But if I could get that repeatedly, I'm going to take it. sooner or later, you have to come down. If not, I'm going to keep taking these 4 and 5 yards. And yeah, on paper, like you said, it's like, man, but you didn't get any explosive runs. But we were thudding you. Like, we kept thudding you to the body, thudding you to the body. And as soon as you think you're going to creep up, we caught you and we threw it deep out. So I just love that our guys got a push and they got to the second level with linemen. Because last year, other than X's like 70-yard run,
yeah,
caught, it was pretty much the same. I felt like they were coached better this year. But if you know how we do with numbers in the media, if you take out one chunk play, what was it really?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times you get caught up in, like, X had 171, 70 of it came in one carry. So he really had one-on-one, but all right, what was his long run after that? So if you want to challenge them, it's like, yeah, man, we need to get a run over 8 yards. We got to do something better. But, you know, what for the first game and what we're used to seeing, Coach Wells would have loved that type of approach of just pounding it and going right here.
It'd be interesting to see what they can do next week against, you know, a bigger front against with NC State. Noah Vaughn looked really good when he got in there with a couple carries. He's kind of been the forgotten guy. And, like, obviously, like, they only put three guys on the depth chart, but they were very quick to remind you that Noah Vaughn's part of that discussion, too, in the running back position. Only disappointing part for me is I just couldn't get a feel for how they're going to, you know, substitute these running backs and kind of what the snap count's going to look like and everything. Jamari Taylor got a lot of the first couple drives, and then they brought Xavier Brown in. He got a little bit of a run. So it kind of seemed like it was more of a, you know, here, you take a little chunk and then you take a chunk and then Whaley, you come in, take a chunk. So not a good feel for that yet. We'll see kind of how that develops. Switching over to the other.
I got one more thing for you.
Yeah.
Position. The one positive, I think, from just the offensive line, as far as running, we only had two carries in which it was a loss of yards. And the loss was just a 1 yard loss, meaning they were hit at the line. So that's a positive in itself that will go unnoticed, is nobody was really just stopping us in the backfield. We were usually, you know, second level before we were getting confronted a lot of the times.
Yeah, not a lot of negative plays overall in the night. No sacks, just good productive play there. Switching over to the other side, and you know, when you score 48 points, a lot of the focus goes to the offense, but let's talk about the defense here. Talk about the rotation on the offensive line. I didn't even try to keep track on the defensive line how many guys played in the first half. The one thing I wanted to take note of is this really interesting pass rush package that they're using on third downs, kind of their NASCAR package that they experimented with towards the end of last year when they're just trying anything to get any kind of pass rush going. So they used on third downs Fisher K-Mac, Jacob Holmes, Dan Rickert, and Kazeem Moore. The crazy thing with Dan Rickert, though, he's like 6'2", 230. Maybe he's more than that now. He was like lining up at nose tackle, and then he would like switch with Kazeem Moore and go to the outside. It just seems like they are kind of using him as a rover to like just attack the weak point of the defense on those pass rushes. What'd you take away from the defensive line?
Yeah, I really felt like they played with a level of nastiness that we hadn't seen. It just goes to show when you bring in guys from like winning cultures and understanding what it looks like the approach is going to be totally different. And when guys are fresher, they're going to play better as well. Like Jameer Carter, I think, played 17 total snaps. So when he was in the game, you got the best of him because his engine was right. But you're talking about Dan, who I call on a broadcast like our form of Rudy, because he's a smaller, the runt of the bunch.
Yeah.
He's been explosive since he stepped on campus. And to have a young man like that spy MJ Moores, like he was spying MJ Moores. Like you said, he was lining up in like, I call it like a Weapon X type of vibe where you never know where he's going to be. So if he's alongside Kazeem Moore, who's a bona fide pass rusher, and you don't know who 52 is, he's going to surprise the heck out of you. And when he surprises you, he's going to make you pay a price because he's going to make a big play. So I really like how we utilize each defensive line we had in their skill set. Like Hunter was running around, Melton was running around. Then our backers played off of them because they were clean. Like our defensive linemen fired off the ball, utilized their hands to find the ball. Then they would disregard the offensive lineman and get to the ball. And it was one or two hats. It was sound tackling. It was a lot of, you heard that when people were hitting. I told people when Mattis Marcellus was hitting people, you heard, you just heard a collision. And that was like something being from the old guard of UVA that you miss when the Micah Kaisers or the Quinn Blanders was here, like when they would hit people and you just heard, fah! Like, ooh, they hitting out there. And that's what I was hearing with this defense. So anyway, that was fun. It was fun to see those guys running around.
Yeah, Kazeem Moore got a lot of pressure back there. People will look at the stat sheet and see one sack, but they mm-hmm. were in the backfield a lot. And MJ Morris was like thrown over the 6'7" arms of Fisher K-Mac or Kazeem yep. Moore coming free off the edge. So he was under duress the most majority of the night. I think Virginia mm-hmm. only gave up 3 explosive plays overall as a team.
Yeah.
And the secondary had a big part to do with that. But you kept talking about the fla, and you didn't mention the biggest hit of the night was Landon Danley just laying him out on the sideline over there.
Wow.
I came away really impressed with Danley. I had liked what I saw in practice this fall. And I just think he's a really good athletic presence that they need in there when you don't have Cam Robinson.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. So the defense didn't give up 100 yards rushing. They gave up 254 yards of total offense to an air raid offense. You gave up less than 300 yards to an air raid offense, an offense that wants to throw bubbles, throw slants, quick game. You didn't take shots on the field. So Cam wasn't playing. Landon steps in, was a former safety, moved to linebacker, and still has that athleticism, understands the concept of the defense. Lowering the boom, you got guys rotating in. We haven't talked about the DBs yet, but this is that you know that this scheme, it works hand in hand. Like, you got to be able to cover so the guys up front can play free. And then if I could play free, then you'll do better on the back end. Our safeties, with Neil and Mentor, their ability to tackle in the open field, like Mentor had a lot of one-on-one tackling assignments with those bubble screens.
Right here in my notes. Yeah.
Erasing you, bro. Like, that was like Jonas Sanker, or that was Joey Blunt. That was Juan Thornhill. That was Quinn Blanding. That was a Anthony Poindexter. Those were guys that Rodney McLeod, like, those were the type of safeties that was one-on-one. We good. He'll get them down.
Yeah.
That's speaking to how well Mentor tackled in the open field.
That was right atop my notes for the defense is Ethan. Like, you're missing that with it. You don't have Jonas Sanker now to have that open field one-on-one tackling. And Ethan Mentor, there's a couple times I'm like, I don't know if he's got it. And he brought him down. Like, it was simple. Like, he was, I don't know if he missed a tackle in the open field.
No, he didn't.
Like, he was really solid there. And obviously he had the interception, and that's what people will point to. But I just thought he played a really good game overall. And it's like, you know, Antonio Clary's over there on the sideline and he's trying to ramp back up, but it's like, I think you can take your time, man. Come back healthy, because Ethan Mentor has got this locked down. We'll see what he does, you know, next week against, you know, as the competition gets tougher. But it was a really good, you know, first start for Mentor back there at safety. And Devin Neal, I think, looked really good as well. Yeah. The guy I got to mention in the secondary is Donovan Platt, the corner. This is the thing, like, you know, the stat book won't tell you everything, and you got to watch the game. As soon as he was in there, they didn't take him out. Like, he was locked in on those receivers. He had 3 pass breakups on the game, and just, like, he was glue to whoever he was defending.
Yeah, he was the Black Knight for real. He came from Army, and you said he was glue. The one thing I like about Donovan Platt, I love when a defensive back can pattern read. Can play 7 yards off, read pedal, maintain your leverage, understand tendencies, keys, where the ball is lined up, and play to that and be confident in what you're doing. And when he got a pass breakup on a double slant on 3rd down, when he almost picked it off, I was like, there we go. Because last year we couldn't stop looky slants, the RPO looky slant.
Yep.
You know, we had a tough time. And credit defensively this year, we showed we could even stop the slant one, the inside slot slant, because our linebacker helped Mentor by buzzing underneath, and that caused Morris to come off him and go to the outside slant too late, because Platt had not only closed space, but he became the receiver. But he had, like you say, had 3 pass breakups. They kept going at him, trying to go at him deep. He had good coverage. Connolly had good coverage as well. When Jordan came in, he had good coverage. Like, Connolly is 6'3", and he's playing bump. When he was playing off, he showed fluid hips as well. They're coached well by Coach Cox. He does a good job of just paying attention to the little things. And it was a pleasure, man, to really watch Platt just really cover. Like you said, what he did is not going to show up on the stat sheet. He was my defensive player of the game on the broadcast because of they wanted a lot of throws, and he looked his way, and he was there. And that's when the rush would get home, and you would see Morris look for a check down.
I think he was making guys run the wrong routes too. Like the, Morris was throwing the ball like outside, and the guy was cutting inside the field. I'm just like, I don't think they know where they're going because Platt sent them the wrong way. Yeah, he was really impressive. And we've talked about this before last season. Like it was so much it was made of, you know, why are guys playing 10 yards off? If you got a smart player, he can do that, like you're talking with Platt, but you got those bigger guys on the other side now too, with Carnley and Jordan Robinson, or wherever, whatever side they're playing, where they can play a little bit more physical because they got that length and speed to be able to do that. So really overall impressive game. And another guy that, I don't know if there's any like key plays I can point out, but Jason Brevard, in that nickel spur spot, he just looks like he was talking a lot and like getting guys in the right spot on the field, which is impressive for a guy that, you know, only got here in back in January. And he already seems to really know the defense in and out.
Yeah, that communication is key on defense, especially from that position, just because you have checks depending upon the personnel to your side, you know, two receivers, three receivers. Are they motioning away? Are you getting that orbit motion in the backfield? If you start off with two receivers and you get an orbit, we may check because it's three threats now. Even though the guy's in the backfield, we know he's going to end up being on our side. So we have to adjust our coverage to having three receiving threats versus two. So for him to be on board, to be able to echo it to the corner that's to him, and then that corner can echo it to the safety so he won't have to look back. The mic can hear him talking. So the mic understands, all right, I know what covers these guys are in. This is what we're giving up. This is a threat. And then the ends can hear it. Now they know the window that the quarterback's having. So if you got Komet, who's 6'7", and it's like, I got a linebacker buzzing out to the curl flat, let me make sure when I rush, if I can't get there, get my hand here, because I know the slant window is right here. So being able to communicate that close to the defensive front allows everybody to know and identify where the threats are at and where they're weaker at, where their weak is at. And it just allows everybody to play freely when everybody's on the same page because of that communication.
Overall, top to bottom, offense, defense, special teams, a good start for Virginia on the season, winning 48-7 over Coastal. Quick look ahead to NC State coming up this week, a non-conference matchup. I know that's got to be weird for you to hear. Yeah. NC State's been in this conference for a long time, but obviously the biggest question mark is just Chandler Morris. How is he going to look going into this one? Just from what you got to see with Kalen going in there, if for whatever reason Morris is not there against NC State, how do you feel about this offense?
I feel like with any quarterback we have in there, I know it's going to be preaching them, utilize your weapons, allow them to be them. So if Kalen is the starter, right, just say worst case scenario, Kalen is the starter. First of all, you call the plays to his skill set. But with his skill set, with that play calling, you allow Cam Ross to be himself. So get him the ball in space. You allow Dakota Twitty, get him the ball in space. Devise, you know, something that allows guys to catch the ball in space. It doesn't have to be down the field. Like, you could throw a five-yard hitch to Trail. You could throw a quick mesh route to Cam. You could throw a slant to Jamal. Like, understanding your personnel and understanding what's asked of you. Now, the difference between Kalen and Morris is the football IQ with the experience.
Yeah.
One can process faster than the other. It's not a knock on Kalen. It's just one young man has started four straight years on opening day. So that's the drop off, but you gain height and vision.
Yeah.
So, but I expect Morris to start.
I think he will. I think he will. Yeah. Especially with a non-throwing shoulder. You could probably ice that up during the week. I think, you know, some people were concerned at first just because it looked like a helmet to helmet kind of hit. But
yeah,
once we saw like the ice on the shoulder and everything, and then Tony Elliott clarify after the game, but it seems like it should be something that he can come back from, but we'll see what Tony Elliott says this week. NC State last week. I don't know, how much football did you get to watch this week?
I watched a lot, and I'm still back and watching.
Because I typically, I don't know, with three kids, I don't watch as much as I probably want to.
Yeah.
But this opening week, I was like, sorry guys, dad has the remote now. Like it is fall. Like Thursday night, I had the split box up there with NC State on one side, then Duke Elon, my alma mater, on the other side. So I was watching both those games. Then Friday night was trying to watch. I tried to watch Wake Forest. It didn't go great. And then what was the other game on Friday night that was happening? It's a couple on that. I know, like
Did Notre
Auburn and
State play
Baylor.
Friday? Oh no, they played Thursday night. No,
yeah, they're Thursday. I was watching a lot.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to say. NC State game though. Any early takeaways about them?
I mean, I think they sound up front. I mean, I know they are coached well on the offensive line with Coach Tuesday, who was here. So
we know that.
So line wise, they're going to be sound. Defensively, like you said, it's going to be stout. It's going to be a different look than what Coastal Carolina brought to the table. The environment's going to be different. John Freeman shared a crazy stat. Since this is a non-conference game, I think they only lost one in the last 27 or 28, or maybe two. So since it's a non-conference game, they haven't lost. And I don't think we've lost. We haven't won down there, I think, since 2012. We haven't been going down there every other year, like a year's
past. Yeah.
So it's just one of the things where it's a big road game. Last year, I remember going to Wake Forest. It was a big road game. We wanted to get that road win. And you're in the same boat this year. When you win five games, every game's a big game for you the new year. So get used to it, because if you win this game, even if you playing Wilmer Murray, it's still a big game because you want to be 3-0 in the first, all the superlatives. So it's just one of the things where you're going to be tested. It's going to be a part of the game where they're going to have momentum. And you got to show that resolve, that fortitude. Best case scenario, you hope you, you're leading start to finish. But it usually does not work that way on the road.
No. I saw it kind of put this way to me was, this kind of game at NC State week two, non-conference or conference, whatever it is, these are the type of games that 8-4 teams, 7-5 teams, like the good teams in the conference, those are the type of games they win.
Yep.
If you lose, that's the type of, 5-7, 6-6, just scraping by, kind of like last year win. So this is going to be a big sign of growth, which is why I picked it as kind of one of my key games for the season, similar to Wake Forest, just because it's the early litmus test to tell us, what kind of direction are we going here? And I think that's what's going to be really key. One thing that was kind of pointed out, as NC State got out to what it was like a 17-0 lead or something like that, they blew the doors off them in the first half, and then East Carolina kind of worked their way back, and they're doing a lot more up tempo. And we saw UVA use a bit more up tempo at times here, on that one drive where I said they swapped the entire offensive line. They're kind of going up tempo that whole drive. Is that something that we could see Des Kitchens go to more as we get into week two?
Yeah, and a lot of times, I think the one thing that people got to recognize if you want to play fast, first down has to be successful.
Yeah.
They got to get 4 to 5 yards. That's when you could get up and go, because it's second and short. But if you run and you get stuffed, it's hard to hurry up. Why am I hurrying up in the second? So first down is very important. So if you haven't successful runs and or passes on first down where you're getting a chunk of the first, the 10 yards, going tempo allows you to pretty much predetermine what the defense is going to be in. Like whatever their base defense is in, most of the time they check right to it because they don't want you to catch them off guard. So that is important. That's why first down, you can't have a legal procedure.
Yeah.
You got to go ahead, get you a chunk play, second down or that chunk. When you're rushing, you can't have a legal procedure. Like, you got to play clean. So I think that's what made it better for our offense. We started playing clean. And then for a lot of fans, think about this. We had back-to-back drives of at least 80 yards versus Coastal. And one of those drives, it took less than 2 minutes for us to go 80 yards.
Yeah.
Have we ever said that with a Des Kitchens offense?
And part of the reason we're talking up tempo here is because NC State and their new defense, they like to run a lot of guys in and out on the field. So if you can kind of trap some of those guys by going up tempo, that obviously gives you some advantages out there, especially, if they got more of a pass kind of defense in there, all that type of personnel stuff. So really interesting game coming up. And I think kind of Vegas shows that it's going to be an interesting game because 2.5 points, NC State's a 2.5 point favorite at home. That's a toss-up game to me.
According to the sports bettors I know, you automatically what get 3 points because you're at home or something like that.
Okay. So yeah,
I don't. Like I guess I don't do that sport.
It's as good as even. You get like the you get the home advantage, but it's 2.5 points. So I don't do sports betting either. I look at the points when they come out, and that's the last time I'll look at it.
That's
But
it.
Yeah. All right, Ahmad, we will see you down in Raleigh this week. I think you got another person in the booth with you this week, right?
Yeah, I got QB1, man. Matt Schaub returning. This is one of the five games that be a part that he would be a part of. And man, it's always fun having Matt in the booth with John and myself because he provides a wealth of knowledge. And I just love to just hear him break down the quarterback position and what offense is trying to do during the game. So I just sit back like a fan and just soak up the knowledge.
Yeah, I know people love hearing him too. So looking forward to that in Raleigh this week. Also, you got Ahmad's his breakdown of the game on the Believe in Virginia podcast. That's going to wrap it up for us. Again, check out everything at thesaber.com as we go throughout this season. I got a story up on Cam Ross right now. We also launched our new Who's On post-game report. Quick little updates, analysis from the game, some of the things that Tony Elliott said in the press conference. That's going to be exclusively on our YouTube channel, the Who's On podcast YouTube channel. So check that out. Follow, subscribe to the Who's On podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, including YouTube. And we will see you later in the week. I got ESPN's Andrea Adelson joining me here to talk some ACC football as well as Virginia and kind of their start to the season. So you can check that out later in the week. That will be coming out on Thursday. So I'll see you then.
Subscribe to his podcast.
On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.